This is WVW, Broadcast Network News and Commentary, with Brannon Howes.
Thank you so much, and welcome, welcome, welcome to this very special second town hall meeting with a very live audience here in the Mid-South outside of Memphis, Tennessee. We have four retired FBI agents. If you missed program number one, you'll find it at WVWTV.com. This is a production of WVW Broadcast Network. We're also working in conjunction with Lindell TV, FrankSpeech.com, VCY America. Those are just some of the networks we know are picking this up. We're going to be offering it to others as well. But if you missed the first show, I think four will get done today. You can find the program number one at WVWTV.com. Quickly go down the line real quick, have each guy give their name, and then we're going to pick it right up where we left off.
My name is Brian Shepard.
My name is Terry Turchie.
David Baldovin.
Cecil Moses.
And again, in the first show, they gave all their bio, their years. You got to see the first show if you missed it, WVWTV.com. All right, so our last show, Terry, we kind of left off with giving some quotes by the Weather Underground. Would you like, of course, we know in 74 was the Weather Underground document, correct? 74?
Right.
And that was the Prairie Fire.
Prairie Fire, the Weather Underground Manifesto was called Prairie Fire.
About that thick.
Exactly.
And you can print it off online for free, I think, now.
You can. And that's one of the things you should do. Go and run off a copy of Prairie Fire and keep it and read it. And you will think you are in present-day circumstances.
And, of course, tell us who were some of the figures, because it'll tie in with David Baldovin, where we left off. We'll come back to him. Give us some of the key figures that would have made up the Weather Underground in 1974, who, ironically, are still around.
They are, and they're very vocal when they get a chance to be. One of them was Bill Ayers. And, in fact, Bill Ayers was the leading signator on Prairie Fire. Bill Ayers married another individual from the Weather Underground organization named Bernadine Dorn. And, of course, Bill Ayers also, a number of years ago, decided he liked a particular presidential candidate and threw a big party. In his living room for this candidate, and that's Barack Obama. So the Obama campaign, of course, tried to say that we've never really had any kind of association much with Bill Ayers. But certainly President Obama has said enough to let us know he knows the Weather Underground Prairie Fire document as well as any of us do if you've read it.
And, of course, Bill Ayers is an unrepentant domestic terrorist. They were involved in numerous bombings and even killed a police officer, right?
The Weather Underground claimed responsibility. I'm not saying this, or the FBI is not saying this. They claimed responsibility between the period of about the late 1960s and into the early 1970s and about the mid-1970s for 2,500 bombings across the country of military installations, of government installations, and the whole idea was to overthrow the government. They forged an alliance. They called it an anti-racist white type alliance with the Black Panther Party I earlier talked to you about, founded in Oakland. And the Black Panther Party went on to kind of break up into the Black Liberation Army. During the 70s, the Black Panther Party / Black Liberation Army was responsible for a number of ambushes and assaults on police officers across the country, and until the Black Panther Party was essentially put out of business as a terrorist organization.
Mm. Let's go back to this quote that you provided earlier. We need a revolutionary communist party in order to lead the struggle, seize power, and build the new society in, quote, Prairie Fire 1974. Of course, we also know that we go to Bill Ayers' own website. I found an article about burn down the American plantation, you know, talking about burning things down, burning down the system. And yet, we have seen on television, guys giving interviews talking about we need to burn down the system. And when they say we need to burn down the system, they mean the American free market system. And they also, of course, talk about in the 1974 Weather Underground document, their manifesto, Prairie Fire, they talk extensively about white supremacy. So this idea of free market people being white supremacist is not new. That's their pejorative. And they go on to praise Mao, the communist leader Mao, and talk about working with the Palestinian Liberation Army. So the Red-Green Axis is even right there in that document as well. Comment from you and then the other guys.
Absolutely. The Weather Underground takes all the buzzwords from today, anti-racist white movement, slavery, America's a country founded on slavery, white supremacy, white privilege. We got to get rid of the police. The police are the instrument of oppression in our society. And finally, to the whole topic of the Middle East and the fact that we've got it all wrong. This is the Weather Underground. We have it all wrong with respect to our relationships with Israel and the terrible, oppressive way in which Israel, like the United States, has treated the Palestinian movement and so in Palestine. So,
and they want to see China's way of life come to America.
China is the model. Cuba was the model. And you'll see a slide later where one of the people's names who you're very familiar with, Bernie Sanders, calls attention to the fact that I took a trip to Cuba, and Cuba is a great place. This is what I want to highlight as far as what they're doing down there in particular areas, and we'll show you that slide. And of course, this is a man now who's literally writing the economic plan for our life, the infrastructure bill that mm-hmm. the Bidens want to pass. So all of these things, while we're talking to you and we have these dates on here of 1974 and 1967 and all these things, these are coming to pass because this was the cue. This was like, here is what we want to do. This is the strategy. Oh, by the way, you'll want to know this right now. The Weather Underground Prairie Fire calls the strategy to overthrow the U.S. government by the name Resistance. The resistance. And back in 2016, before President Trump even occupied the White House, Nancy Pelosi was out talking about the resistance summer. So all of this is maybe from the past, but all of this information from the past, as often is the case, was predictive of the future we would find ourselves in. And that future is now. And that's why now is the time to, if not ever, to start speaking out and speak out loudly and confront these people.
And of course, Black Lives Matter, started by people like Patricia Kluwers, who admits she's a trained Marxist. She admits that on video. It's reported she was mentored by Eric Mann of the Weather Underground, correct?
Exactly. And so these names, other names, less prominent names, keep coming up. The name Eric Mann. If you go search online for George Soros, and there's a huge document that I forget who did the research, but if you start reading that document, I don't have it with me today, but one of the people he hired to kind of bring into focus all the things he wanted to do was also a former member of the Weather Underground. And so these people are showing up everywhere. Gerald Nadler, if you've heard that name,
yes,
is the current Democratic Party chairman of the Judiciary Committee, okay? Back during the Clinton administration, Gerald Nadler spent many of the days as a congressman that he had kind of teeing up Susan Rosenberg, who was in prison for the murder of armored car drivers up in upstate New York, and I'm talking the cold-blooded, brutal murder. Gerald Nadler was spending his time teeing up a commutation of her sentence for President Clinton to sign as he left office, which he did. And she's out today. She was a Weather Underground fugitive. But that's not all, and we'll get to more of those people in a minute.
Dave, you want to comment before the other gentlemen do?
Well, Terry, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't there a video out there on Bernadine Dorn declaring war on America from back in the late 60s, early 70s? I seem to recall that such a video exists.
Yes, if it's still online. But yes, right. She had that speech, and you can find that. I just don't know if there's a video still.
I'll find it.
Okay, yes. If
We'll splice it in and post-edit.
That would be great,
yeah,
if we can find it.
A federal grand jury in Detroit today charged the 13 top leaders of the Weathermen with plotting to bomb public buildings in Chicago, Detroit, New York, and Berkeley, California. The Weathermen are the militant faction of the Students for a Democratic Society. Only one of the 13 is now in custody.
At 7:30 this morning, KPFK received a call from a woman identifying herself as a member of the Weather Underground.
Hello. I'm going to read a declaration of a state of war. This is the first communication from the Weathermen Underground. Kids know the lines are drawn. Revolution is touching all of our lives. Freaks are revolutionaries, and revolutionaries are freaks. If you want to find us, this is where we are. In every tribe, commune, dormitory, farmhouse, barracks, and townhouse, where kids are making love, smoking dope, and loading guns, fugitives from American justice are free to go. Within the next 14 days, we will attack a symbol or institution of American injustice.
Power belongs to the young people and the black people in this country. Come on, we gotta fight it out. We gotta build a strong base, and someday we gotta knock those.
The FBI said the Weather Underground organization, which took credit for the bombing, is the same radical group which was responsible for the bombing of the U.S. Capitol in 1971 and the Pentagon in 1972. But federal officials don't really know much about the group, which is believed to have between 20 and 30 members.
My name is Bernadine Dorn, and I was part of the Weather Underground from, well, it's hard to say when it started, 1970 to 1980. It's underground for 11 years.
There's no way to be committed to nonviolence in the middle of the most violent society that history's ever created. I'm not committed to nonviolence in any way.
I'm a teacher now in a community college, and my students will occasionally bring up the war in Vietnam and ask me what my involvement was. And I'll say, well, I helped found an organization whose goal was the violent overthrow of the government of the United States. And people would, my students would look at me as if I'm from another planet.
This system is going to be overthrown. It's going to mean a fight. And it's going to mean a lot of white people risking a lot of things when they finally join on the side of the black people and the people of Vietnam and around the world who have already begun the fight.
I'm not going to tell you, oh, I walked in here this day and put a bomb here, or I made this here, or I blew up this car, or I held up this bank. I mean, there were armed robberies. There were all armed robberies, terrorism. You know, there was all kinds of things that went down that were illegal. So I tell you that we did them. But I'm not going to tell you which ones I did or who did what, because I just can't do that.
I'd like to quote for you from the U.S. Congressional Record from January 1963. This was entered into the Congressional Record, 45 Current Communist Goals. And where the goals are stated is in the book, The Naked Communist, by former FBI agent Cleon Skousen. I'm not going to read 45 goals to you. I'm going to read three. We talked about the oath. Do away with loyalty oaths, number 13. 17, get control of the schools. Use them as a transmission belt for socialism and current communist propaganda. Soften the curriculum. Get control of teachers' associations. Surprise, surprise. Put the party line in textbooks. Now, part of what I've done here in Tennessee with others is been involved for several years with review of public school textbooks. And but it falls on deaf ears, ladies and gentlemen. I found that when you go before school boards, which is in even rural Tennessee school boards, they don't want to hear it. Number 35, though, discredit and eventually dismantle the FBI. So there you go.
There you go.
Now, Trevor Loudon, who some of you probably know, and, you know, there's a note here that's part of the questions about the CIA, the Marxist infiltration of the CIA and the assassination of JFK. I'm not going to comment on that, but... I've got a couple of friends that are retired CIA folks, and Trevor Loudon is a wealth of information. CIA was basically co-opted from day one, okay, when it was formed, because the FDR administration was heavily influenced by communist aides, Harry Hopkins and so forth, and Brandon probably knows these names better than I do, but Trevor Loudon, I was telling these folks this morning, made a comment at a summit I was at about 2 or 3 years ago, and he said that the FBI was the last to fall, and the reason was because CIA recruits out of the Ivy League schools have been penetrated for years. The Bureau basically recruited out of the heartland of America, which is what you see up here, okay? And so that was the bulwark, and basically the goal was, because Hoover's FBI and the FBI that Terry talks about, we were standing between communism and the FBI, and that is no longer the case. So apparently they've made that leap. And that's not to say, I'm not going to stand up here and say that that includes every individual FBI agent, okay, because I know that there's specially chosen agents that are working with Durham, okay? So there's still individual agents that are good and trying to do their work, but they're being controlled by the DOJ and the hierarchy of the FBI. Mm. I should say the corrupt hierarchy of the FBI.
The corrupt hierarchy, yeah. Here we have an article we just found while you guys were talking. I searched it. The Guardian from 2003, the Americans who declared war on their country. In March 1970, a California radio station received an anonymous tape in the Post. On it was a recording of a woman's voice apparently declaring war in the United States. The quote, "The lines are drawn," intoned the mysterious speaker coldly and deliberately. "Revolution is touching all of our lives. Freaks are revolutionaries and revolutionaries are freaks. Within the next 14 days, we will bomb a major U.S. institution." That was her quote. The voice, it says, the article belonged to Bernadine Dorn. There you go. And I think we've already found the video. I found it here on my iPhone. I think we've already got it. So, Cecil, would you like to comment on the things that are being said up to this point?
Well, let me just say this. I never thought in my wildest dream that that back in the 70s, 50 years ago, we were working the Black Panthers in Des Moines, Iowa, blew up the Des Moines Police Department, the Ankeny Police Department. And then I moved from there to Jackson, Mississippi, and I was working an outfit called the Republic of New Africa. It was a black separatist group. They were going to take over seven southern states, and their goal was to be the headquarters there in Mississippi. And we had one of the worst shootouts I was ever involved in there in the early 70s in Jackson, Mississippi. I never thought we'd be at this point in our history. Here I am, and I'm going to give you my age. Penny would kill me if I did. But my point is, I never thought we'd be here discussing how far left our country has swung to. I just never saw that. I just didn't see that coming. It bothers me that there's so little confidence in now in our current institutions of government, including the FBI. It worries me to no end, because I have grandchildren coming along and what have you. So I'm concerned, Brandon, about the cynicism, the distrust of government institutions. We have to turn that around somehow or other. I don't know. I think that's why we're here, and Terry and us and all the others. And I just saw another colleague of mine walk in back here, Eddie Young, I've worked with over here in Memphis, Tennessee. Glad to have Eddie here today. Eddie Young, he's back in the audience here.
He's retired FBI?
Retired FBI, yeah. Wow. Dave and I worked with Eddie. But I'm just concerned about where the country is right now, and I hope we can turn that around.
Absolutely. Brian, you want to comment on what we've been talking about?
I could certainly echo everything you said, Cecil, and, of course, everything Terry said. And I think all of us up here on the panel are shocked at all the developments that have happened in the country so quickly. And for the last several years, but they've been accelerated to a point that it makes your head spin when you start thinking about it. And I'll just take one case in point. I was on the SWAT team for several years, and I can tell you from my experience, and I think all others of the Bureau agents here would echo what I'm going to say. We never did a search warrant, conducted a search, or conducted an arrest of someone who was not a violent offender. And the thought when I heard about what happened with Roger Stone just outraged me so much that it just wells up inside you. And you say, what's happened to this great organization that we worked with? And you say, well, maybe that was, as Terry said, maybe that was just a fluke. Maybe somebody just let that happen. No, not with Roger Stone. It had to have been approved by senior management. And what happened with Roger Stone? He was not a violent offender. He was a white-collar criminal, if anything. I don't know. I'm not going to be here and judge his criminal liability. I'm not here to do that. I'm here to say the tactics that were used were outrageous. And if I had been on the SWAT team and I was told that this is what we were going to do, I'd say, not me. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to do it. I always felt good about we were going to do something to help keep America safer. And with someone like Roger Stone, who is, as I say, a white-collar criminal, nonviolent, no
actually,
history.
Let me just correct, because he was never convicted of anything, and when it was finally dropped by the Department of Justice, they said they found nothing. They found nothing. And of course, he tells me, because I interview him often, that he couldn't do anything legally about it because he took the pardon to keep from going to jail and dying there, he thought. But because he took the pardon, he couldn't come back and sue. But the Justice Department and the FBI dropped the file late on a Friday, he says, to show that they found nothing. Nothing. It was all manufactured.
But, of course, part of the deal was he couldn't come back and talk about that.
That's right. He was gagged for months. Months he was gagged. He couldn't make a living. He couldn't host his radio show. He had a radio show that was taken off. I mean, they destroyed him. He lost his house. He lost his cars. He lost his savings. His wife is fighting cancer.
Yes,
I mean, they've destroyed the man.
It's outrageous conduct.
I shouldn't say they destroyed the man because Roger refuses to be destroyed, but they tried to destroy the man. They took a lot from him.
Right. And that shouldn't happen to anyone in America. It should not happen. If he had been someone who had a history of violent behavior, was a flight risk, all of those kinds of things, those were things that you use a SWAT team for. It's a dangerous situation. And to go into anyone's home, and I've heard about that in several other recent cases that just, again, outrages me, knowing that the Bureau resources are being used for these types of arrests is
so why is it being done? Is it to intimidate the public?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the only conclusion I can come to. It's the only...
So this is propaganda.
It can't be answered any other way.
This is the government, the central government, the DOJ, the FBI, using this and bringing CNN in tow with them.
Well, that's the other thing.
To set a narrative to the American people.
I'll just say this. We always use local law enforcement. We'd give them a call shortly before the search or the arrest and say, hey, this is going to happen here. We'd tell the chief, and he'd give us a couple of squads, and they'd block off streets, okay? And if there was any media out there, it wouldn't have happened until we cleared. It was going to be clear. And for CNN to be out there at that time, it was not coincidence. In the FBI, there are no coincidences, okay? Things happen for reasons. And that's part of the whole culture problem within the Bureau. And it has to be nipped from above. You get your leadership, right, Cecil, from above. And the integrity, as Terry said, the three things that we live by, bravery, fidelity, and integrity, none of those three things are present in situations like that. You can't have integrity. If you're going to tip off the news media and you're going to go knock on somebody's door and knock it down at 6 o'clock in the morning when there's no reason to. They're not drug people. They're not going to get rid of drugs. They're not going to have weapons. There's nothing that you can show a judge to issue your warrant that would authorize you to do those kinds of things. And so people who have been involved, which we all have, and know what it takes to get those kinds of warrants, get absolutely bothered by it. And it just, those are the kinds of things that don't leave your mind. They just don't leave your mind. You say, this can't happen here. And why it continues to happen, as you said, Brennan, you come to the conclusion there's some other purpose going on. And you can draw your own conclusions as to what the other purposes are. I've drawn my own conclusions. I'll just leave it there.
And I think, again, it's propaganda. It's intimidation. It is the same reason we have the doors being opened on video at the Capitol January 6th. Come on in, respect the property. And they're taking selfies. The police, Capitol Police, are taking selfies with these folks. Come on in, respect the property. The doors get flung open. I understand those are magnetic doors. So how did these doors get open? Who unlocked these doors? Why did they not do more to stop that situation from happening? Because I think they wanted it to happen. And now we find out there apparently are FBI people that were involved in that, precipitating that. We're seeing video footage of people that we don't know who they are that are encouraging the smashing and breaking out of the windows at the Capitol. And then when a man comes up and says, stop that, one of these guys in all of this body armor and black outfits and radios gets physical with the guy. And he was a patriot saying, knock that off. I mean, the whole thing, you watch all the video, has the smell of this was orchestrated by the FBI. And then you add... Then you add the supposed attempt to kidnap the governor of Michigan, and now we find out that overwhelmingly the majority of them in the car and in the meetings were either FBI or FBI assets. So again, I have to ask, what is the scenario here? He will tell you, Terry will, he brought to us an FBI asset. And it's at our website, wvwtv.com. We did an hour. The asset is on a phone, and the asset was asked, well, let me back up. The asset brought to the FBI video footage of Antifa, Black Lives Matter, they said Muslim Brotherhood, involved in crimes, burning, looting, rioting, raising foreign money. When the asset brought it to the FBI and it was looked at, the decision was made, not only are we not going to prosecute, even though you could identify these people, destroy that. Then the asset was told, now we want you to go and find the white supremacist in this group, and this group in your area, to which the asset said, those are patriot groups. They're not white supremacists. There's blacks, whites, Hispanics. And the asset even said, I think there was even a Muslim or two in there. And of course, by Muslim, they meant more history, not Sharia, you know, Muslim as my daddy was a Muslim kind of thing. So the asset said, you're barking up the wrong tree. These are not white supremacists. No, you go and you find. Now this was, we were told, before January 6th.
Okay.
So the FBI apparently was laying the narrative that the domestic terrorists in America were white constitutionalist patriots before January 6th. And that asset is on audio on the phone with Terry and I, and we did a whole hour on that. Right, Terry?
Exactly. Very important point, too, that this asset was deemed very credible by the FBI.
And they saw you and came to you, right?
The asset saw or heard us talking and then called as a result of one of the interviews we had done together. And so the asset wanted to make clear, the FBI and I have always gotten along really well. I've been working for them in this capacity for quite some time. I was directed against international terrorism, and I had come up with information about connections involving Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and as Brandon said, some of these groups. So this was, and this is important in our world, in the FBI viewed this asset as very credible. This was a strong asset. So they would go to the DOJ when they had information that asset had given and said, we believe, the FBI believes, this is a very credible asset. And then all of a sudden, you have the election of November 2020, and then you have approaching the inaugural address. Well, you have the FBI go back to the asset and say, we're not interested in those things anymore. We need you to switch over. We're interested in white supremacy and white hate groups and people who are going to be committing violence from those groups. It was the FBI that told the asset, we're no longer interested here, we're interested here. And as Brandon said, the asset corrected them. This went back and forth for a while until finally, and the FBI agents understood when the asset kept saying, I can't do that. That's not honest. I don't know any of those kinds of people domestically who would commit terror acts or do anything like that. Well, then the FBI said, well, look, we've communicated with our headquarters. These were like the asset's handlers. And we are going to have to close you. And then they came back with their supervisor, and they made one final plea that this asset will deviate and go over to this area and get away from where they'd been tasking the asset. And so you can see there that clearly the dynamics changed when we had a new president, and then we all saw in an inaugural speech, and just think of the contrast between what President Kennedy said about America in 1961 and what Biden spent some of his time telling us about, white supremacy and the hate and what happened on January 6th. He began his presidency attacking half of the country and tarring them and tarring us with the brush that if you're white, you must be angry, hateful, white supremacist. And all of this is wrong. And the FBI chased that trail to give them what they need. And that still goes on today, is what I'm maintaining to you.
And you know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is sitting there, Milley, I want to understand white rage. I think we should teach critical race theory, cultural Marxism to our military. I want to understand white rage. Give me a break. He's a disgrace to the uniform, in my opinion, and many military guys say so.
And let us know if you already knew this, but I just found out recently that just a few weeks into being the confirmed Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin sat down and spoke to the entire military through video and lectured them on rooting out white extremism and white supremacy and hate groups inside the military. That's from the Defense Secretary, and what a terrible way to start dealing with the United States Armed Forces. I mean, it's just awful.
And, what are you doing over here, David? David's killing a wasp. I just got a text from our cameraman. There's a wasp.
A red wasp.
A red wasp.
A white Anglo-Saxon.
White Anglo-Saxon wasp, yeah. Right there. Glad you're here. White Anglo-Saxon wasp. Oh, my word. All right, so... Oh, yes, let's do that. But the military, they also put a hold on promotions after Biden regime came to be to look for the white supremacist. When I got the document from an active military intelligence guy with 600 agents who answered to him, he sent it to me before it came into the press. We went on it over on radio TV. As you read it, at least the Navy document on the hold of promotions till they could root out the extremists, it meant anyone that was a conservative, went to a Trump rally, believed in the Constitution, and you're thinking, this is absolutely a purge of the U.S. military. Yes. Yeah. And now, of course, they're going to use the Nazi death shot to purge the military, because the guys that have done their homework are like, I'm not taking that. And many of them I know, a couple of them were about to receive the promotion of their career, and they wanted to take it, but they cannot stand there and be a part of teaching Marxism to the troops under the masking term of critical race theory, and they will not take the death shot. And so they're like, we're gone. We're losing. They're setting up all the scenarios they can to purge the patriots from the military. The only reason you would purge anyone who is going to defend the U.S. Constitution is because you plan on destroying the U.S. Constitution.
Exactly, yes.
And now they're going to find reasons to disarm the American people. We're reading this infrastructure bill with funding for what we're told by Mike Hammond of Gun Owners of America is red flag. So wait till your anonymous phone call comes in that, you know, your neighbor is a nut job and they raid the house and take his guns. You're guilty until proven otherwise, and good luck getting your guns back. There's no reason to disarm the American populace at a time that they're opening the borders and letting a standing army come in, including allowing the Taliban letting the Taliban pick who comes into the airport at Kabul and the Taliban pick who gets on the airplane. And then we see that the pictures are mostly, as General Flynn said the night this was breaking, he comes on Lindell TV with me, the night that these 13 soldiers were killed, I would say murdered, because obviously murdered, but murdered potentially maybe even, I would say, by our own government, because they did not put into place the standard procedure from withdrawing from a nation. This is not how you withdraw. They have detailed plans. They know the NEO plan. They know what it is. They follow it to the T. They could have stopped this. It didn't have to happen, which meant that someone's derelict or deliberate intentions caused these men to be murdered, not only by the terrorists that did it, but our guys, through negligence, caused this to happen. And I'm not sure it was negligence. But we let the Taliban pick who comes in the airport, sources told us, and get on the plane. And as General Flynn said in the interview with me that night, it was breaking, these are military age males. These are military age males. And now we have 700 of them. They've walked off. We don't know where they are. So at a time we're allowing a standing army to come into the U.S., we're going to disarm the Patriot. One of these guys that's in military intelligence with 600 officers who answered to him, he had the corner office, literally worked in a skiff, which, as these guys know, is a room where nobody can hear what they're talking about. And his whole office with these 600 people that answered to him was a whole skiff. It was a vault. And he's just recently retired, and now he's working with us behind the scenes, and will do more with us. And he's glad to be out and to be talking. He wanted to be here today. He had intentions of flying in just to be here today to talk to these guys, for him to brief them on some things and let him these guys brief him. And but he couldn't make it because of some other things he's got going. But he sent me a document over a year ago. He said, I knew this was in the system. I just had to find it. And he went into the system, the security, you know, it was nothing he divulged to me, never has he ever, there was a clearance issue that would get him in trouble, break the law. But he said, I had a hunch that inside our intelligence arena was the description of patriots in a way that was not acceptable. And he said, I found it. And he called me and he said that if you are openly complaining about your perceived threats to your liberties or freedoms, you are a potential violent extremist. And this is in the intelligence arena computers that he found. This is the only reason this is happening is because we have allowed the ideology of the Weather Underground, the long march through the institutions, to penetrate. And institutions that once fought the communist are now being run by the communist. Would any of you disagree with that statement?
No, not a bit.
No.
Not a bit.
Nope.
I'd like to take a deep dive into the ideological spectrum.
So we're going to go to something that David put together here for us. Let's see. Here we go. Right here, David. All right, let's roll this. You want to explain this and push the button right there, the down arrow, as you want?
Okay. Yeah, I didn't dream this up out of my pea brain. This comes from the miracle that changed the world, which we're going to give away here today to some lucky soul, okay? The 5,000-year leap, it's about the providential founding of America. And the founders described this as a political spectrum, but I think it's better described as an ideological spectrum, because I don't want to get into political as in Republican, Democrat, okay? What am I hitting here? Anything?
Down button.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The ideological spectrum that the founders described, their political spectrum, was totalitarianism on the left. And when I talk about this, you hear often today, when somebody brings up the words left and right, and they try to draw a moral comparison between the two, I know that they don't know what they're talking about. Even folks on our team, okay, on our side, pundits. So on the left, you have total government control, totalitarianism, and the right, you have no government, anarchy. Well, let's call this what it is. That's another way to soften the blow. Just generalizing and calling things left and right And Joseph Piper has a little pamphlet out about the abuse of language and abuse of power. The abuse of power or the abuse of language leads to the abuse of power. Now, every one of us is being subjected to 24/7 propaganda, abuse of language every day.
Brainwashing.
But nobody wants to name the enemy, which I'll get into later with the Muslim Brotherhood issue and the Islamic issue. But okay, socialism. Generally socialism. What is socialism? Communism, fascism, Nazism really comprises socialism. Monarchy, okay. Maybe a little bit less if you have a benevolent guy at the head of state. But these are all tyrannical type ideologies. And Rush used to talk about it, that we are exceptional. That's why we're exceptional. Not because we're special people, but because we are an exception to governments throughout the world. Now, I put Islam in there, and I'll get into that later, because that is a 24/7. It is not just a religion, ladies and gentlemen. It's a total way of life, and if you are Sharia adherent, it defies human nature. People can't live that way, okay, if you're Sharia adherent. And when I talk about Islam, I want to stress I'm not talking about a person, a Muslim, because there's many people that identify as a Muslim that are not Sharia adherent. You agree with that,
Brian?
Like
our friend Sharam Hadian, right, whose daddy was a high-ranking military officer in Iran and said, was a beer-drinking, pork-eating Muslim, meaning he wasn't serious.
Right.
And when the secular government was about to fall, and you bring in the Ayatollah Khomeini, he said, "I'm out of here," and he took his family out 6 weeks before the fall of the Shah.
Time to go.
So
yep.
that's what you're talking about.
Yep. Now, U.S. Constitution, the founders, in the book, it's put at the fulcrum of the spectrum. Okay, that's where the authors put the founding of the U.S. Constitution, and you can see that it's over where there is limited government. Not too much government, but not total anarchy in the streets. Otherwise, you don't have any government. Now, what happens, okay, here's where the abuse of language and the oath come in. We took an oath to the founder's constitution, okay, not to a living constitution. A living constitution or an oath to a living constitution is an oath to nothing, okay? Now, what happens if you, in your mind, if you just forget about the anarchy and right over here and cut that spectrum in half, all of a sudden you have the people who took the oath to the Constitution as far-right nationalists, right?
Mm.
And white supremacists, because the evil founders, you know, were all white folks. That's what's happened. And the people who don't get this or understand it, which are many, in politics and the pundits, don't understand what's happening. And our side does the very same thing. So whenever you see these phrases used by the right and by the left, when you look at this now, I want you to understand there can be no such thing as right-wing despotism. It's impossible. Because the more right you go, the less government you have. People like to talk about South American right-wing dictatorships. They aren't right-wing, folks. They're over here on the left.
Ortega?
Yeah.
Like Ortega?
Right.
Nicaragua?
Right. You know, it's just you have to understand how the abuse of language is taking place and how it motivates people. And if you don't understand it, you're going to go, okay, you're going to equate right and left. It's not equatable.
Cecil?
I'll defer to my colleagues for now.
Okay. David or Brian, you want to make a comment at all before we keep moving?
I just feel like we didn't do the January 6th movement enough justice in that. You mentioned it, Brandon, and again, you talk about injustice. And there, let's keep in mind, we've already mentioned that DOJ and the FBI, you look at the letterhead for the FBI and it says Department of Justice, and the FBI is underneath, okay? And that kind of says it all. Now, if, again, I don't want to belabor the point, but I want to leave you with an understanding of there, you are not prosecutors in the FBI, okay? You are investigators. That's the job of the FBI, to investigate federal criminal violations. The Department of Justice, they're the prosecutors. So, we are the fact collectors, supposed to be. And after we collect the facts, we take those facts and discuss them with the United States Attorney's offices throughout the country. They are the ones who decide whether or not a case will be prosecuted. In theory, this all sounds wonderful. The problem is, when you start mixing the two, when you lose the autonomy of the FBI, and the FBI becomes a watered-down version of the Department of Justice, and no longer has autonomy, and the Department of Justice has goals that you know are not part of what you're all about. And what you talk about the oath, we can talk about that later, but I just wanted to say, when you see the injustices that have happened to a lot of the people involved in the January 6th activity, and yes, there were some bad things that happened. People needed to be prosecuted for some of the bad things. But in my opinion, and again, now I'm going to have to say, all governmental agencies are subject to freedom of information requests. We have offices set up in the FBI to do nothing more than answer freedom of information requests. Well, everybody asks, well, can't we FOIA the department that handled the security for the Capitol, U.S. Capitol Police, and find out the facts? Because that's all we want to know. What exactly happened here? Well, all of a sudden we find out that the U.S. Capitol Police says, we're not responsive to FOIA. What? What? Every other federal agency in the government is responsive to FOIA. And they're saying we're not responsive to FOIA. How can that be? And we're not only that, we're going to lock up, we're going to go out and seize all these videos from all these people who were involved, but they're going to be locked up, and then it has to go before a judge. And they go and make these, I've heard of several people where the FBI just shows up again in force, treats these people like they were scum of the earth, and then they get their cell phones, any video they had from that day or beyond. Again, very outrageous conduct. And then, and the FBI has nothing to do with this, but these people are then, by the Department of Justice's aegis, they're sentenced to solitary confinement. I think some of the worst serial murders in the country's history didn't serve that kind of confinement. And then we hear about the conditions in the D.C. jail were so bad that they wouldn't even pass inspection where these people were kept. And we heard from one of the people who said there was cold air put into his cell 24/7. So can you imagine? You can't ever get comfortable. And he said there was black mold on the walls. I mean, these are conditions that you don't have in third world countries. So what is going on?
Cruel and unusual punishment,
it's,
right?
It's very cruel and very unusual. And where are the attorneys, and what can they do to help these people? And so...
By the way, I hear they gather every... I don't know if they gather, but I guess some of them can hear each other. But I understand that from a congressperson that finally got in this last week, at an appointed time, they sing the national anthem every night.
At 9 o'clock at night. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So... I'm not saying that I know all of the facts, because obviously the facts have not been released completely.
But how can it be trespassing if they open the doors and say, come on in, but respect the property? How is that trespassing?
That's one of the questions that remains to be answered, Brennan, in that...
And what about all the leftists that have gone in and have done sit-ins and sit in the offices of congressmen and won't leave? They're made out to be heroes for doing this. You know, this is like, you know, your great civil rights heroes for doing some of these things. And maybe there's a point in time where you do some of those things in a lawful, in a way that's not violent. But we've made heroes out of people in civil disobedience, Jane Fonda and all these other people. Well, you know, why are these people not in solitary confinement?
I don't have the answer to that. That's not in my...
These are rhetorical questions, by the way.
Yeah, but I will say, to answer your question about if they were let in, that's one of the big questions that's looming, and that, in my opinion, is one of the reasons why a lot of these videos have not been released and are locked up, because they don't want the public to see.
It will destroy the narrative.
That's exactly right. There is a narrative, and it has to remain.
And again, the narrative is... constitutionalists, patriots, people that may have supported Donald Trump are bad people, they're dangerous people, they're domestic terrorists, and they're lawless. And they're the subversives. Everything is psychological projection. Q's your enemy of what you actually do. And yet we know, going back to the Obama administration, the Department of Homeland Security was saying potential domestic terrorists were those that were pro-life, interested in Bible prophecy, that were veterans, concerned about the border. These were listed as potential domestic terrorists going back to the DOH under Obama. This has been going on, this narrative of setting up conservative, patriot, God-fearing Americans, law-abiding Americans, has been going on for years.
It's got a long history, and this is probably the, in my opinion, one of the saddest events, the conclusion of which has not come yet, the unfortunate tragedies that have happened to the people who, many of whom, there was a woman who wasn't even inside the Capitol that subsequently got arrested. She got fired from her job because they learned that she was arrested, and they couldn't think of a crime, so they made up a crime that I had never even heard of. It was like, what was it? Dancing in the park or something. I mean, it was a frivolous, the charge wasn't that,
but right.
It was something as ridiculous.
Exactly.
As that.
But yeah. So we're at a very, you know, I think what they're doing, not only propaganda and intimidating and silencing people, but what they're trying to do, I think, is push the American people until they get a reaction. And then they can use the media to paint. See, if you thought the KGB was coming after you to throw you in a hole for 23 hours a day, how many people do you think now are going to willingly start going along? Some of these folks at some point are going to say, these people are criminals. I don't trust them. They're going to subject me to something that maybe I won't survive. And even if I do, mentally, I may never be the same. I'm not going. And they're going to push this narrative of what's happening to these people to the point that some Americans say, I'd rather die. And they're going to set up a conflict. Then they use the conflict to further the propaganda. I think part of this is intimidation, but it's to set up a conflict and so they can gaslight. This is they're gaslighting is what they're doing.
It all comes back to an old term, psychological warfare.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyone else want to comment before we keep moving? I want to mention the go to the red-green axis, because the Weather Underground book from 74 does talk an awful lot about the PLO. And that red-green axis, red being the Marxist, the green being the Islamic green of the jihadi flags of those nations, that red-green axis is seen in Weather Underground. Can you speak to that before David, who has spent so much time on this, speaks to it?
Sure. The Weather Underground incorporated all of these issues, and I talked about it before, so I won't keep beating it. But whether you're talking about slavery, you're talking about the whole idea of white racism, all of these issues are old issues, but yet they're the old strategy that has now been kind of polished off to become the new strategy. So part of that was, and you can see easily why this fits together, back in the 70s, the Weather Underground, and these were smart people, they already had decided Israel's a problem because Israel and America are kind of like this, and that gets in the way of what we want for the Palestinian people, but not really. It wasn't the Palestinian people they were interested in. It was more the alliance and solidarity with the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO. It was with the people over in the Middle East that were causing all kinds of problems related to terrorist acts against Israel. And so the Weather Underground knew because, as you said, they talked about Cuba. They talked about what was going on in the revolutions down in South America. They talked about the Palestinian issue. All of these things come together. Because if they don't come together, then we would be up here kind of peddling a lie for you. This is part of their movement. And we talk about it historically, but it really isn't even historical anymore. Because when you have a pattern that begins many, many decades ago and then continues to manifest itself as you get into the 80s and the 90s and now the 2000s, and all you're doing is seeing the same pattern with a different face. That's all it is. But now it's back, and it's back ready to really swallow us up. Because something happened between back in the 60s and 70s and now, and that is we had the administration of Barack Obama. And that is all, I mean, as simply as I can put it. And when he came along, and before we ever even knew him that well, what did he say to everybody? He said, we're about nothing less than the fundamental transformation of America. Now, everybody loved that. Oh, man, the guy's a great orator. Well, if you're working and you worked where we did and you started hearing that, other things come to mind, and it's not great orator. In 1970, the founder of the Black Panther Party, co-founder Huey Newton, gave a speech at Boston College. And during that speech, he said, what the Black Panther Party deals in and what we believe in is total transformation of America. If you read through Prairie Fire, you will come to transformation used time and again. That basically, I mean, I don't want to give critics ammunition, but transformation is a key word when it comes to talking about communism. The transformation to what? Well, to Marxism. And then Marxism, what is that? Well, that's kind of the peaceful transformation to this wonderful social, economic, cultural, equitable, equal kind of order. And then they say that didn't work too well, and suddenly it is actually the first step in the transformation to communism. You go down the socialist road until you get to communism. Why? Because socialism never works. We've seen it time and again. We see it today in Venezuela. We saw it in Daniel Ortega's Nicaragua. We saw it in El Salvador. And now we're seeing Ortega, who was tossed out back in the 70s finally, or in the 80s actually, because Ronald Reagan confronted him and stood up to him. Suddenly what happens? Ortega gets all polished off, right? Sounds familiar. And goes and runs for election, gets voted in. Oh, Ortega's back. And now people can't wait to try and get him out of there. But guess what? Now they can't get him out. He won't leave. And he's taken their guns. He's taken everything from them. And the country has collapsed.
And by the way,
he won't leave.
And what did Hollywood say about him in the 80s?
In the 80s, you've got people like Sean Penn wanting to get their photos with Daniel Ortega. And it's not too far removed from back as the waning days of the Obama administration were occurring. And he went down to Cuba. And almost like the healthcare, Obamacare, happened overnight when we didn't think it was going to. He went down to Cuba, and overnight, suddenly, we're friends with Cuba again. And that was just the beginning. Trump was elected, or guess what the next step of the plan was? We need to start having reciprocal relationships. And one of the first things we want to do is start bringing cops from Cuba up and people in the government and kind of have them get to know our people in government in places like the Bureau and stuff like that. This is what they were talking about. And at the same time, he goes down there and we have him at a baseball game with his arm over Raul Castro, and they're getting along really well. Well, the point man for Fidel Castro with the KGB back in the 70s when they redesigned and built the Cuban intelligence services was Raul Castro. And today the Cuban intelligence services, bar none, has one of the best reputations for infiltrating and being successful at recruiting people inside government institutions. So you see what goes on here, and so I will turn it over to Dave because that's where the Weather Underground was. And so it's historical, and yet it's not historical because they kind of identified for us that solidarity in the world that propels forward this movement, and here in the streets it takes the form of mass mobilizations, making it look like social issues, to influence government and officials to then pass legislation, which then takes away a little bit of your freedom on this issue or that. And that's how the Marxist transformation works. But remember, in Prairie Fire, they also say, but we know this will only go so far. And at some point, the shot will be fired because we cannot do this simply by a peaceful transformation. At some point, it becomes a revolutionary communist transformation. Because what is that point? Because people are going to say, we don't want to go through this. Who's asking right now for your guns? And they want those collected because they can see that we could come to this point where people say no, and we have no way to come back at them.
Absolutely. And when we come back for our third town hall meeting, we're going to come right to you, David, and get into the red-green axis. This is a great setup from how 1974 Weather Underground, these Marxists, were already doing the red-green axis. We'll come back to you on that. But I'll say in the closing minute here, one of my concerns is that as the American people wake up, they have to figure out what to do with us. One of the things I'm concerned about is that they will use a financial collapse to get control of us, and a supply chain collapsing, and food, and healthcare, and pretty soon people will say, I don't like it, but I got kids to feed. I got a sick spouse. I need the medical treatment. They can take, as I've been talking about on Sunday nights in a series, the great collapse is necessary for the great reset. Cloward pivot, manufactured crisis. Yep. They're going to use food, and they're going to use other things, to finances, to control the American people so that they are so desperate, they'll say, I surrender. I just want some normalcy. Give me a little bit of security here, and I don't like what's happening, but I have no choice. So I'm very concerned. We even have Archbishop Vigano coming out in September saying that he is aware, as he was warning about the Great Reset, that he's aware that they have already studied and already planned a global cyber attack on the economies and individuals and their work and their way of life. Something you know at our network, we've been warning about with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, EMP, electromagnetic pulse, attack on our infrastructure. So keep in mind, these globalists and the Marxists, they know that they can use enemies, foreign and domestic, to go after critical infrastructure to make the American people suffer if they need to get control of the American people that are rising up. But we'll deal with this when we come back with all of them, including going right to Red Green Axis with David Balderman when we come back. Would you join me in thanking these four men for being here?